Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Remedial student Corey Knockreiner. What are we doing again?
Edumacation.
I don't need no education.
This is part two of our four-part series, focusing on different verticals and cybersecurity tips and stuffs for them, all because of Cybersecurity Awareness Month.
Hooray!
So with that, let's jump on in. This week, we are focusing on a different vertical after talking about healthcare last week. Now we're going to move into edumacation.
But we don't need no education.
Also,
so we really shouldn't have to worry about security there, right? We don't need it.
Maybe we can just move into like sing-along time with Corey Knockreiner.
No, thank you. Nobody, especially folks with headphones, nobody wants that.
That's a good point. And I am glad you've left your vuvuzela back in the office too, so...
Hey, I still have the interwebs. Don't tempt me.
Oh, boy. Someone steal his computer from me.
I think there's a tube on the interwebs that can give me a good tube vuvuzela sound. That's what it's made of, right?
A the internebs.
That's how I imagined the inner tubes working. It's just that vuvuzela sound in the background.
Maybe Corey isn't the best person to talk about education.
Can't you tell how high my education is just from my random Stable Genius comments?
Exactly. So as we did last week with healthcare, this week we'll go over a few main topics when it comes to education.
Yes, we done fixed all the doctors. Now it's time to get you teachers to know stuff.
Exactly. Actually, I don't know if I really want my teacher doing the network security for my school if I was an administrator at it. Actually, who knows?
Uh-oh, that doesn't speak a lot for your education.
Well,
you don't trust your teachers' smarts?
My teachers were fantastic. They are just not security professionals. So...
When limited scope of information, a speciality.
Yes, exactly. If they wanted to teach me maths, that's great, but probably not setting up a firewall.
Yeah. I'm sure my geography teacher doesn't want me teaching geography.
No? Is that because you continued to fail over and over?
No, I passed it fine. I just don't care.
Sorry, Mrs. Frizzle.
I did all the memorization and I've done forgotten it all. Because we don't need no education. Sorry, let's go. Let's secure those schools.
So if you work in education, there's a few different things that you need to probably be focused on. And one of the big ones, especially in K-12 education.
Yeah, those compliance things. Are there any teeth for these schools?
We're starting again with another compliance section. And this time it's SIPA or children's.
SIPA. That's what I like to do to drinks. SIPA them every weekend.
Yes. Yes, Corey. That is the acronym this week.
Let's try a fun softball and see if Google's involved. What is SIPA, Mark?
Oh, well, Corey, it is type, Children's Internet Protection Act.
Damn, even I knew that one.
Exactly. So this act actually really boils down to protecting kids from obscene or healthful content over the internet. And it's actually a requirement for any school or library to receive funding from the E-Rate program. So before jumping into SIPA.
By the way, for the international audience, I know we're focusing probably a lot on U.S.-based compliance. We apologize for that. We don't have time to go to every country. But I do know that other countries have similar ones, and some are even more strict. Like, I forget what it's called, but the U.K. has a very similar one.
Even more strict.
And they're more strict in that even thing like extremist sites. They have to enforce search keywords and other things like that as well.
Yep. So when it comes to SIPA, there's a few things it has to address. So obviously, regular old internet access and browsing, you need content filtering in order to prevent kids from going to these potentially bad sites.
Yep.
It also covers email and chat rooms. You need to block unauthorized access or hacking in quotes is what it's in. I don't know why they put hacking in quotes. Maybe because, I don't know.
Hacking has multiple meanings.
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe they...
Or unlawful activities by minors online, and you also need to block unauthorized disclosure too. Now that said, SIPA does have things in place to allow unblocking of some of this blocked content for adults to use for modified research too.
Libraries are such a weird place because it's it's a place where an adult can come in and there's like freedom of information things where they can't block pornography, and yet they also need to block pornography in children's sections because of SIPA.
The SIPA limbo.
Yep.
So before moving in, I mentioned it's a requirement for the E-Rate program. If you're in education, you're probably already well versed with the E-rate program, but for some of our listeners,
nobody knows about that. Nobody likes discounts and free stuff and extra funding.
Kind of cool. It provides some pretty heavy discounts for schools and libraries to obtain internet access and things related to internet access, like basic firewalling as well, too. It's a pretty neat program put on by the FCC and our favorite human being, Ajit Pai.
It was actually available long before. Yes. If our favorite person was leading the FCC before it existed, I think we still wouldn't have it.
But it is under his stewardship right now.
Let's hope he doesn't notice.
Exactly. So when it comes to K through 12 security or education is much more than just that, actually. So there's K through 12, but then there's also higher education as well, and they're very different beasts. You want to go into that a bit?
Yeah. So this is one of the at least you and I have both talked to a lot of customers. We have a ton of education customers. And the funny thing about education is there's a hard difference between what a school at K through 12 might do versus a university. And the main thing is, you know, in K through 12, by definition, you're a child. You know, you haven't hit 18 yet. You're not an adult.
Well, you know, unless you've been held back several years.
Okay, good point. But school as a whole needs to act like you're a child. If you're held back, it's questionable if your numbers match your internal. Anyways, I'll be quiet. Whereas at a university and in many places, you've hit that adult age. And so that really means is SIPA applies to K through 12. But I don't think it applies to university at all. Mm-hmm. But even down to network security and the way they have to treat information, there's kind of a different philosophical thing. When you're a child, adults feel that they should protect you. So they feel it's okay to not just pornography, but extremist sites, guns, drugs, alcohol, tobacco, whatever. It's okay and it's actually considered good, even in a free democratic society, to limit what kids can do. But if you're in free democratic societies, when you go to your university, the whole point of a university is free information, full access to learning, being able to learn about anything you want. So they kind of treat network access differently because of that. You know, while we'll get into a university might have a staff or faculty network versus a student one, and there's differences there. On the student network, universities, you know, from the high level, feel compelled to leave the internet as open as possible purely because it's a learning institute.
With a few minor restrictions like blocking BitTorrent and stuff like that.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, they do that maybe on student dorm networks, but I think you'll find that the student school networks are sometimes not doing it as aggressively. They might monitor for it. And I'm sure every university has different facilities. But in general, they don't want to pick and choose what you do as a student. I mean, they have to worry about legality. If their network's used illegally, that they're going to block. But that permissiveness for information is a good thing, but it also leads to potentially opening networks up to more vulnerabilities.
Exactly. And one big thing when it comes to K through 12 networks is you are making them restrictive, but as kids get older and more inquisitive, they're also more likely to be like hacker pants Corey over here and try and get through all of those restrictions.
Says the guy that I'm sure defeated his school proxy. When I was a kid, I think we were still using modems to connect, so there was definitely no proxy or internet thing I had to defeat, although I defeated other things.
We had the equivalent of whatever NetNanny was.
I'm sure you and I both would have used things like UltraSurf or other tricks. One of my favorite was, you know, the fact that you can actually write a not binary, a purely numerical IP address that's translated to binary and then translated to the IP address. And back when the web blocking solutions only basically looked for, you know, URLs and domain names, it was an easy way to get past any filter.
Corey was such a hacker back in school.
Maybe Corey.
So also when it comes to education, though, you do have to protect your kids too, but there are still external threats that might target organizations too. We kind of hinted at it last week that healthcare isn't the only place that has records that could potentially be worth quite a bit of money.
Yeah, schools are another place where, you know, we do tend to sometimes give social security numbers, but we actually give them our medical records in some cases, you know, especially K through 12, where they have to react to emergencies, or universities where you're in a dorm. And so they actually have a lot more records than the average business. In fact, I believe one of the people you and I work with, Ben Broback, you guys may not have heard the name unless you've worked with him in the past, but Ben Broback, when we were doing predictions, one of his was saying schools would start to be targeted. And I can't remember if that was 3 or 4 years back.
That would have been quite some time, 2016 to 2017.
It didn't quite hit that year, but it's actually hit recently. I mean, right now schools are being targeted with ransomware.
Yeah. And when it comes to external threats, I actually pulled some stats out of this year's Verizon Data Breach Investigations Report, which has a section dedicated to education along with some of the other verticals we're going to chat about.
You mean Verizon?
Verizon, yes.
I got to pronounce all the companies wrong.
I forgot that was a thing. You're right. So in the Verizon Dibber.
Dibber, Data Breach Internet Report?
Investigation Report.
Yep.
We are the best with acronyms in this business. They break down some of the things like what caused the breaches, what are some of the tools and tactics used during the breaches. And one of their bullet points that really stuck out to me was 80% of breaches involved stolen credentials. And there was a steep drop-off from that to other methods of initiating the breach. So it seems like stolen credentials is a major issue when it comes to external threat actors coming into a education institution as well, which makes sense because, like most networks, we design to keep them the bad guys out, the good guys in, and we do that through authentication. So what are some things that education institutions can do to protect against that threat? Just don't use passwords?
Yes. Kind of covered in healthcare. I mean, one, have password best practices. But again, MFA is getting more approachable. There's ways to do MFA without hardware tokens. I hate to say it, but a lot of maybe not K through 12, but middle school through 12 kids have mobile phones now. So theoretically, you could do that. Schools, one thing that's interesting, and this is something schools need to think about, I think we'll talk about students bringing devices to school soon. But another thing that's happening is more schools are issuing devices. One is Chromebooks. But two, I mean, and my daughter's high school, and they now issue a laptop too. I guess they can't assume that every student has a personal computer at home. So she got a fancy Lenovo-like flippable tablet laptop. So, you know, you kind of had that one for authentication. You can definitely use maybe the Chromebook as the second factor.
See, I remember there. When I was back in my day, when I was in elementary school.
Pop-Pop Mark.
Exactly.
Man, that must be, I'm great Pop-Pop Corey now.
This was back in the days of like Gen 1 IMAX. So computers were definitely a thing.
Are they the colorful, pretty?
They were the really colorful
like PowerBooks and towers.
Turquoise and pink and purple ones. Yeah.
It was like orange, a weird, like.
We had like one or two of those in the classroom, but then for bringing stuff home, we had these things where we called them Alpha Smart. We didn't call them. They were called Alpha Smarts.
Oh.
I actually went on this massive nostalgia rabbit hole on the internet the other day researching these things because I was trying to remember exactly what they were. But they're basically like this little keyboard with a tiny, cruddy LCD screen that could display like four lines of text. It could hold like 80 pages worth of writing. But we'd use them in class in order to like write our book reports and then plug them
they
in with a...
They remind me of like a modern miniaturized version of the old word processors. Like I'm back in my great Pop-Pop days versus your Alpha Smart days. You know, right after typewriters, we started to get word processors, which were typewriter size, but had only one digital LCD line where you could see the line you're typing, but it would store pages. So this seems like just a super miniaturized version of that.
These were the coolest things ever because when you got to finally bring one home, it was like, oh, I got my own little laptop. This is awesome. Look at me, 6-year-old Mark with my cool laptop. I remember back in the day, there was like a big deal about taking them home because they're very expensive and you didn't want the cruddy kids to break them. They're like $20 on eBay. I'm going to go buy one.
I just saw one at seven something. I guess it could be bid up.
Was it the Alpha Smart Pro? Was it a
maybe
ugly, horrible beige square?
It looked like a light black version with a little square keyboard and a little.
Ours was like these horrible, ugly beige ones. I'm going to go find one and buy one because now I'm curious how they actually worked.
But in any case, I mean, what we're getting to is there's a lot of devices in these schools now. So you not only have to secure your network, you know, use things like WatchGuard has WebBlocker to help you do SIPA and to protect from prevent kids from going to sites they shouldn't and to help you get that E-rate. But you need to start doing endpoint and network security to protect the devices that are popping up because a lot of schools are issuing them, which is kind of good because you can secure them. But the other issue is kids bringing their own. So what does a school do about kids bringing devices into the network?
They apparently confiscate them and stick them in their desk drawer until after class. At least that was my experience back in the day, but I imagine it's changed a little
bit now.
I think
kids have it easy today. While I don't think they're supposed to be looking at their cell phone while they're in class, they're allowed to keep them in case of emergencies. My daughter has her cell phone in class, which is, as we know, a computer. She can do whatever the heck she wants on.
My school's policy was that it had to stay in your locker. At least in junior high. I think in high school, they became a little more prevalent. And
you're getting more and more poppy every day, Mark.
Back when I was a kid, we had to walk uphill backwards twice a day.
I do remember begging my parents.
With penguins throwing snowballs at us.
Penguins throwing snowballs. Is that a... What school did you go to, Corey?
That's me just throwing out what comes out of my mind. Welcome to my stable geniusness.
You're stable. The most... stable of geniuslessness.
If people really knew what went in, came out of my mind, you'd run. I'm kidding.
But you mentioned it. Kids are bringing in their own laptops these days, and you do still need a way to make sure that those don't become a security threat to your network. And that really means basic network segmentation is a great first step.
I mean, that guest network should be really separated. I guess if you're a K through 12 school, you can consider whether you offer them a guest network or not just to get them the heck out and to prevent them from using them during class. But I do think most schools nowadays have guest networks. So
especially if you're allowing laptops for like research purposes or
exactly
writing reports or whatever kids do in school. I don't remember. And another stat I wanted to pull out, a bit of a different tangent from bring your own device, was one of the other bullet points that really stuck out from that Verzon Dibber was that 80% of attacks used a web application for an attack vector, which kind of makes sense because, I mean, back in my day, I had to bring a report home back to my parents. But I imagine these days you can probably log into a web portal and see report cards.
As someone that pays tuition for university, not only can I do it for my elementary and high school kids, but there's web portals for everything. Piles and piles of web portals. And I've also found, talking to different universities, I don't know if it's as much through a K through 12 school, but different departments tend to have different networks and different controls.
Really?
So one university could have 12 different web portals, you know, the university web portal for finance, the general university web portal just for the university, but
the Don Draper School of
Science,
Marketing.
Exactly. So I could totally buy that. There's every department's kind of managing their own little thing. It's kind of weird because again, the whole idea of free information, letting the departments control their expertise sounds good. But security-wise, if you're trying to centralize a solution that the whole college or whatever can do, it becomes a challenge.
Exactly. But so with a lot of attacks going after web portals, that does mean that schools and universities need to make sure that they're focusing on keeping their stuff up to date. I just picture in my mind the log into your kids' school report card webpage thing that looks like it was built in like the late 90s. And
I just remember War Games, man. Remember when he stole the password to log in and to school directly and change his grades? He would love 2019 because you don't even have to sneak into the office to get on their little central computer. You could do that over the internet with a crappy web portal that has a cross-site scripting or a SQL injection vulnerability.
Yep.
Bam. So. A's.
If your
I have a 4.5 GPA.
5.0, I'm the best.
Yes. Or maybe you're dumb and you don't realize how extra credit works and you give yourself a 6, which is obviously impossible.
It's all right. If they saw a 4.0 on my report cards, they would have immediately known I tampered with everything. So,
by the way, I think schools should understand web application attacks. Unless you're a security nerd, like I think general IT people get web servers can be attacked, but they tend to think of just software vulnerabilities. And web application flaws are totally different than running an outdated version of IIS or not patching or making a configuration mistake on your web server. The issue with web application attacks, and the reason I think they're nefarious, is they're entirely based on your developer's code. Yes, maybe you're using shared frameworks that have code that you're reusing, and sometimes web application flaws can be in those shared frameworks, and then patching the framework fixes it. But they're really down to mistakes your developer might have made that only exist on your custom web page.
Which also makes them more difficult for you to find before a bad guy does too, because they don't have a whole bunch of eyes on them auditing them.
No, and but it does mean that unfortunately you can't just get a third party to patch this out of existence unless you pay someone to go over and audit your web code. It's something your developers have to do. So what me and Mark always recommend, I mean, web application security is complex. But we don't have to spend 3 hours or 3 weeks telling you every detail, because there's a great organization called OWASP, Open Web Application Security Project.org. There's one acronym I've said enough times that I don't have to think about.
OWASP.
There we go. That's the Canadian way to say it.
Eh?
It's a good time you got it right. So just have your developers go there. And this, by the way, if you're an educational institute, especially in IT, it's something you would love to do. You ought to be teaching this to your students and your coders.
Yeah. I would like to actually see a lot more practical security courses given in K-12 as well. I imagine like something home ec-wise would be a good opportunity to teach kids good security practices when they're young.
We live in a day and age. It used to be only IT people and quote unquote nerds had to worry about it, but that's not the case. Every single human in existence, you know, unless you're in some unknown, undiscovered tribe in the Amazon, if you use anything from a phone to a normal computer every day, this is something you need to know directly.
Exactly.
Not the OWASP level, but the basic
what not to get
click
fished.
On. And yeah.
So. If you're an educator out there, please add phishing awareness to your course. I don't care if it's history. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe, unless you're on Google, because apparently you can't review or rate on there still. If you have any questions or concerns...
Google doesn't want to know what you think about their stuff.
Exactly. Or suggestions for future episode topics, reach out to us on the Twitters. I'm at @XORRO_.
Because we love Twitter. There's like no toxicity there. It's the perfect medium to share happy, wonderful thoughts.
Exactly.
And by the way, you can find me at @SecAdept.
And the both of us at #The443Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you again next week for another special Cybersecurity Awareness Month edition of this podcast.
Because we're both like... not Magneto, Professor X. We can see people despite the fact that we're a podcast. Got to use our brain powers. I can see you listening out there, audience. Hey, what are you wearing?